Thank you so much for the kind introduction. Very good morning to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Okay, today's topic, as you have heard, it is on the importance of heedfulness and mindfulness to cope with life's problems and suffering. So I think this topic is very important. That's why I chose this topic. At the beginning of the year when they actually wrote to me to give my schedule for this year. Like what I have explained, that part was written by me. Human sufferings are very real. Most of us have gone through life. We experience a lot of whatever ups and downs in life. But not everybody is that fortunate, that blessed. If you have not taken care of your life properly, if you don't have the good karma to support you, then as you go through life, there are a lot of situations or realities that can actually afflict you and make you miserable. And actually, this is what the essence of the Buddha's teaching is all about. The Buddha said, the essence of his teaching is the Four Noble Truths. And this Four Noble Truths all centered on suffering, dukkha. Dukkha is about Pali word. He said human suffering is so real that liberation from birth and death, from all of this suffering that comes with birth and death, is not easy. That's why the Buddha actually spend a lot of time cultivating for aeons and aeons. Then finally, when he realized the complete enlightenment, he came to realize this very important truth about life. He called it the Four Noble Truths. This Four Noble Truths center solely on dukkha, which is living beings suffering or life suffering and problems. The First Noble Truth talks about the realities of life and suffering that can bring about dukkha. So the Buddha said, if you live long enough, you will confront all this reality. And he has highlighted 8 of them in his First Noble Truth. He said, birth, old age, sickness, and death. If you confront them without wisdom, suffering will be the result. And as we all have experienced through our life, we have witnessed them too. And sometimes we encounter them ourselves. During moments of sickness, disease, death, it can be very traumatic. A lot of people are affected. Then the Buddha said, the other realities is even more significant. As you move into life, as you step into life, he said, you will confront what he said, a very severe reality that he calls separation. Separation from loved ones, from your prized possession, from the property, the wealth that you hold on to dearly. All of those that you have given so much meaning to, that you held on to so dearly. When it happened, unless you develop the wisdom, suffering is going to be the result. So this aspect, the Buddha has classified a few possibilities, is it? One of the possibility of separation is divorce, relationship part. When you face situation where the spouse or the couple or even those who are not married, when you cannot move on with your relationship, then you find a lot of what they call problem with your relationship, then both suffer. And not only the couple suffer, the children are affected. Their in-laws and all those who have relationship with them, they are all affected together. The other aspect of separation is death. Death can happen in many ways, through disease, sickness, through what they call accidental death. Or sometimes it can even happen through various type of accidents. Nature's disaster, like you heard a lot of these sad cases of tsunami, hurricane, twister, and all those things, and even what they call earthquake, flood. Then sometimes it can even happen during normal life. Kidnap, murder, snatch thief, and all those things. So when we are not affected, maybe it doesn't impact upon us so severely. But when you are affected, it can be very traumatic. Then forced separation is another possibility, the Buddha said. When you are young, because of poverty, then sometimes because of crisis, you get separated from your children, your brothers, your sisters, and all those things. Then moving on, the Buddha said, as you move through life, you will encounter situations where there are a lot of people whom you don't like or you cannot be at peace with. So when you encounter these people, he said, suffering will arise too. Like you heard of a lot of child abuse. Even in school, the children are not exempted. The gangsterism, the bullies, and all those things. Then sometimes you work in a career environment where you are subject to a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, a lot of deadline that you have to meet. Because you may have certain bosses or superior that are not so friendly. Then sometimes they go by this very harsh type of management belief or principle. Management by harassment and fear. They harass you and put fear in you. So under this situation, you can develop a lot of very traumatic type of stress, fear, worry, anxiety. And it can lead to depression. And it's very common nowadays. Even young people are subject to it. And this energy field are very negative when you are faced with that. Then there is also what they call certain problem related to what they call in-laws. Sometimes when your parents remarry, you have mother-in-law, father-in-law. Sometimes they can be not so friendly, quite abusive. Then sometimes they can even do very severe things that can cause a lot of suffering. You heard of incest and all those things. Many of these things happening. Then the other one that almost every day living beings are subject to, the degree varies, but somehow or other it affects you. The Buddha called it when you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, when your expectations in life are not met. Suffering is the result, unless you have wisdom. Now, this part, actually, a lot of people suffer too. But the more severe one that we see is through not understanding life. And we deludedly grasp and cling to what we believe to be real. So the Buddha summarized all of suffering, he said, in short, he said, it is due to human delusion or ignorance that condition them to grasp and cling and hold on to this entity which we call the human being. Thinking that it is real, thinking that this is what we are. Then he break it down into the five aggregates of form and mind. So he said, as a human being, we have a physical body, you have a physical form, then you have a mind, a consciousness that is trapped inside. This consciousness that is trapped inside, he said, you can break it down further into four aspects of aggregates. Because the consciousness or the mind that is trapped inside, he said, can feel, can perceive, the world, the reality, can arise emotion, mental states, can arise thought process, thinking. He called it Sankara. Then he said, our mind and consciousness together with this physical body that have the sense basis can allow us to become conscious of things. We have the organ of the eye. We can be conscious of what we see, what we hear, what we later on the other organ, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we tactile feel and think. So these are the what they call the karmically conditioned form and mind that comes with birth. You are actually endowed with all these beautiful things, but you don't know what they are. You deludedly grasp and cling. And the Buddha said, when you do that, there is a cause of suffering behind it. So because of your ignorance and delusion, you grasp and cling and hold on to this five degree form and mind and thinking that they are what you are and they are so real. And because of that, it conditions your wrong view, that conditions you to grasp, cling, and arise the craving to be afflicted. And the end result is suffering, he said, when you don't understand. So this was summarized, the first noble truth, which he talked about, the reality of life and existence, what suffering is. So first he explained to you clearly how you get yourself entangled and how you get yourself what they call afflicted by all these realities of life and existence, which not only you are subject to, all of humanity and living beings. It is a common problem. It is a universal problem. So the Buddha's intention is to liberate from birth and death. Because with birth, it will end up with death. And in between, there is what he called the reality of life that can afflict you and make you miserable and suffer. So this first noble truth is very important. A lot of living beings, they suffer without knowing why they suffer. Why are they afflicted? Suffering is so real, but they cannot see. They still blame other people and the world for what happened. Yeah. Despite their fear, their worry, their anxiety, their sadness, their sorrow, lamentation, leading to severe depression and all those things. And nowadays, you look at the modern young generation. Very young, they are already subject to a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. They actually enter depression. Yeah. And they end up seeing psychiatrists and all those things. And you can see them in the hospital. Yeah. And you can check around. Almost every family, every living being, yeah, if they live for a certain period, they have gone through a lot. And suffering is very common. Yeah. Then the Buddha moved on to the second noble truth. He said, there is a cause behind this suffering. And the cause he already explained under the final summary of the first noble truth is your ignorance, your delusion, the condition you do grasp and cling and arise the craving. The craving, the positive and negative craving to want things your way. And when you cannot get what you want, suffering is the end result. Because that delusion conditions you to crave, to cling, to hold, to grasp, thinking that they are real, thinking that you can own them, you can have them. Just like this body. If you attach and cling to this body deludedly, thinking that it's me, then what happens? You worry about it getting old, getting sick, and one day die. Yeah. Because you don't understand who you are, what death is. That's why without heedfulness, without mindfulness, you cannot understand life. So the Buddha said the very basis of living is to understand life. And how do we understand life? We need to understand the important laws that govern all of life and existence. And this law has two parts. One is the what they call scientific law. or materialistic law within the conditioned world of materialism. The other one is a spiritual law that can enable you to develop the spiritual understanding and wisdom behind. And when you understand this law, you like understand the secret of life, because these are the laws that governs life and existence. So the Four Noble Truths is one of the spiritual law that you need to understand. So the Buddha explained, first, what is suffering? The Noble Truth of dukkha, suffering. Then the Noble Truth of the cause of arising of suffering, which is your craving, born of your delusion and your ignorance. Then after that, he moved on. He said, there is a third Noble Truth that talks about the cessation of dukkha, the ending of dukkha, the liberation of the mind, the realization of enlightenment. Then the Buddha said, suffering need not be when you have wisdom. When you have trained your mind to be heedful, to be mindful, and develop the meditation as taught by him, so that you can realize the Dhamma or the wisdom that he has taught us, the truth, the noble truth that he has taught us, he has realized and taught it to us. Then enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. Then suffering need not be. All of life problem can come to an end. This is the part that we are interested in. The realization of Nibbana, enlightenment, that can bring about complete liberation from human suffering, from mental suffering, free from all life problems and situations. No more fear, no more worry, no more anxiety, no more sorrow and lamentation, no more of all those depression and negativity. Yeah. Then after that, the Buddha moved on to the final Noble Truth. He called it the Fourth Noble Truth. He not only told you what is possible, he even teach you how to do it. He said, under this Fourth Noble Truth, he said, there is a Noble Truth that talks about the path that can lead you to the end of all suffering. Namely, the Noble Eightfold Path, is it? If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, which has eight noble factors that can make you noble ones or enlightened ones, then it will lead to the end of all suffering, cessation of all suffering. Then no more problem, no more suffering. So this is basically the introduction, the summary to explain to you how beautiful the Buddha Dharma is, how beautiful the Buddha's message is, and how fortunate are we as Buddhists to have this teaching and this understanding, if you cultivate it. Yeah. So now I will go into the talk proper. Okay. You may recall, the Buddha, before he passed away or before he enters Nibbana, they call it the Parinibbana, the great Parinibbana of the Buddha 2,000 over years ago. What was his instruction? His final instruction to all the disciples and the devotees. Yeah? You all can remember? What did the Buddha say? Yeah? Some of you may know. Yeah? Anybody? Ah, yes, sadhu. Very good. Strive on with heedfulness. Do not be heedless anymore. The Pali word is apamadena. Sampadita. This is the final advice. Why did the Buddha say that? Because according to the Buddha, he has realized this truth. And he realized that the only quality that you need to have is this heedfulness or mindfulness. Then you are assured of the spiritual life, the noble life, and enlightenment will follow. So it sounds quite easy. I only need to be heedful or mindful. Then I am already on the path to enlightenment. And all this the Buddha actually spoke about. He emphasized them under the Dhammapada verse. You heard of this Dhammapada verse 21, 22, and 23? Under the Dhammapada, they have 423 verses that the Buddha spoke. And these are all what they call eternal truth. And even until today, each and every of these Dhammapada verses still stand. Never get obsolete. Because during the early day, I tried to reflect, how can the Buddha be so wise? 423 of these truths. Ask me to come up with one truth that can last a century or two, also not easy. Because a lot of the so-called truths that living beings come up with, sooner or later, they become obsolete. Understand? Even scientists also become obsolete. Later understanding will make them obsolete. But the Buddha is so wise. All of the Dhammapada verse that he spoke remain eternally valid. That's why it's very unique. So there is this verse. There are 20 verses within this Appamada Vaga. Appamada is heedfulness. The verse on heedfulness. And the starting verse is verse 21. And the Buddha make it very clear, he said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die, whereas the heedless are as if dead. This is a very important truth. It explains to you clearly the importance of heedfulness. Without heedfulness, he said, you are as if dead. Means what? You may be alive, understand or not? Conscious of life. But you are spiritually dead. Because there is no spiritual life for you anymore. That's why you are as if dead. Because through delusion, through ignorance, you existed through life. You never live. Whereas the heedful never die. Because those who are heedful, they understand through their cultivation and wisdom what death is. Nothing die, no one die. Anatta, non-self, empty nature. So because of that, the heedful never die. And they are destined for enlightenment because Dhammapada verse 22, 23 that follow clearly point out to the monks and the devotees at that time the importance of heedfulness. So Dhammapada verse 22 is a continuation of 21. The Buddha said, clearly and distinctly understands the great difference between heedfulness and heedlessness. The wise intend on heedfulness. And because they do that, they rejoice in the realm of the Aryas or the enlightened one. See? When you intend on heedfulness, you will be assured of enlightenment. You can rejoice in the realm of the enlightened beings, the Arya. Then verse 23 confirms everything. Dhammapada verse 23, he said. The ever mindful, constantly meditative, and the steadfast one, they will definitely realize the supreme, born-free enlightenment that he called Nibbana. So what is ever mindful? Ever mindful means you are most of the time almost continuously aware, mindful. Then constantly meditative means what? Using this mindfulness that you have developed or trained to constantly cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Within this Noble Eightfold Path is the Four Noble Truths. Through that right view, the four foundations of mindfulness, all his essential teaching all spin up from the Four Noble Truths. So that's why when you use it to cultivate the essential Dhamma that the Buddha teach, that is constantly meditative. So you combine these two, mindfulness and constantly meditative, you become heedful. And the steadfast one means you hold on to this heedfulness steadfastly, continuously cultivating. You are destined to realize the supreme born free Nibbana. So that is the most important Dhammapada words that you should bear in mind. That's why heedfulness is very important. So heedfulness will lead to the meditation as taught by the Buddha, the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. And this is what that can free you, nothing else in this world. So it brings me back to the point where during the month of February, remember, I was supposed to have my first talk on benefits of meditation. But I didn't have a chance to come and give the talk because I sincerely apologize for it, because I had to go through one they call angioplasty procedure. Yeah? So I missed out that talk. But don't worry, today I will include that talk in this talk because they are related. Yeah? So heedfulness will lead to the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So today I will maybe just add in this part. Yeah? So when you are heedful, means what? You are mindful plus cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path, yeah? Or what they call the meditation as taught by the Buddha, huh? Meditation as taught by the Buddha. So this is the most important, because like what we discussed just now, the Fourth Noble Truth talk about this Noble Eightfold Path. You cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the cessation of all suffering. All life problems, suffering cease to be. Yeah. So heedfulness is equal to mindfulness plus the cultivation. Yeah. Without mindfulness, you cannot start. So this one, the Buddha calls sati. The real meaning is awareness before the knowing. When you are silent and aware before the thought come out, before the aggregates of mind come out, that is sati. And when you have sati, you can see things as they are. You are not clouded by the thought, by the aggregate of mind. There is no activity movement inside. But the awareness can allow you to see things as they are. And because you can see things as they are, you can awaken to the truth and the reality. Yeah. That's how you cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. That's how wisdom come to be. So this will bring you about the next item that I want to talk. Yeah? Benefits of meditation. Because heedfulness will lead to the meditation. Understand not? Cultivate this meditation as taught by the Buddha. So what are the benefits that come with the meditation that you are going to do, yeah? Following what the Buddha has taught you? Can anybody try to give me some maybe benefits? Some of you have done meditation before. Eh? What are the benefits that will come your way if you do this type of meditation? We call it the mindfulness meditation. Eh? Anybody? The first one is very simple there. When you meditate, what happened to you? You are more peaceful, isn't it? You are more calm, isn't it? So, what benefit is it? Inner peace, isn't it? Correct, right? Yeah? So, inner peace is very important, isn't it? Peace is very difficult to come by. So, you can get inner peace, at least it helps you so much in life, isn't it? When you are in the midst of suffering, problems, a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, and very restless because you have problems of life. You know what are the common problems of life or not? Just now, the eight realities of life and existence is the Buddha's way of explaining life situation and problem during the early days. But nowadays, society has evolved and become more sophisticated. So we can actually reclassify the eight reality into actual human suffering that you can relate to. Let us now summarize what the first noble truth is. The first noble truth, realities, of life and existence, what are they? First, he talked about old age, sickness and death, birth. So old age, sickness and death and birth can relate to what? Your health problem, is it? Correct? Sickness. So this is the first problem that human beings have to confront. Nowadays, cancer, stroke, heart attack, and there is a lot of other very traumatic type of disease, or what they call sickness, health sickness. Even HIV and all those things. So health problem is a very real life reality. When you yourself or your loved one are confronted with this very severe type of health issue, there can be a lot of fear, a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety, a lot of sadness leading to depression and all those things. Because the thought will project, you attach and you cling and you hold and you don't understand what is going on. So health problem is a major problem. Then of course you have what they call, the next one is what? Old age, is it? Old age, you have heard of a lot of this, what they call very severe dementia and all those things. Old age problem. Like dementia. Then when you grow old, as you age, your senses fail you, your health fail you, you become very fragile, very weak, and full of problems. And this is what the Buddha called old age. So physical suffering leading to mental suffering, because physically you are affected through old age. Your consciousness trapped inside. So sometimes no need old age. Sometimes when you have injury, when you have accident, physically also damaged, then you have to confront them because the consciousness is trapped inside. That's why there's a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, then leading to all the insomnia, sleeplessness and all those things, depression, sadness. Then the third one is what? You encounter a lot of what they call money problem, isn't it? So money problem is what? Financial problem. And this one can be very real, isn't it? Those who have financial problem, who go and get themselves entangled with what they call the loan shark and all those things, it can be very traumatic. Then sometimes when you are confronted with poverty, or sometimes not really poverty, in the sense that your children need to go to university or need money for certain things, to help them maybe go through the operation or procedure, but you don't have money, especially if they want to go to university. So financial problem can be quite serious. Then when you are in the business field, when you are short of capital and cash flow and it wipe you off, that can be very traumatic. Then when your business is not doing so well, cash flow problem, financial problem leading to fear of business failure, bankruptcy and all. Even young graduate nowadays a lot, credit card problem, you heard of, leading to all the, what they call, action from the bank. Some of them are already bankrupt because a high percentage, they just live on credit. Then the fourth one is career. This one is very severe too. Huh? Career problem. What else? Huh? That torment you. Huh? Relationship problem. Clear not? Your relationship with your loved ones. Yeah. This is to redefine the first noble truth. Yeah. And these are very real problems. And even you are very successful in life. Yeah? When you confront some of these problems, you still become afflicted. Because relationship problem is not something money can buy. Or health problem is not something money can really help you resolve. It may bring about certain, maybe better medical services and all those things, but it doesn't finally help you out. Then mental suffering. Yeah? The sixth one is mental suffering. That's why you have a lot of this, what they call depression case and all those things. They have mental issue, understand? They couldn't actually live with those thoughts, the negative thoughts that they actually arise. And nowadays, psychiatrists recognize this mental problem. They call it OCD and all things. Huh? Obsessive, compulsive, disorder. Yeah. And many other related issues. Then seven is what? Huh? When you break the law. Yeah? When you actually overstep the line. Yeah? You get yourself into legal problems. Legal issue. Yeah? So all this can be very traumatic, very severe. And it can bring about a lot of problems. Especially this legal problem, police case and all that. If your children or your loved ones are involved in drugs, murder, crime, all this can be very severe. Yeah. And the fear that they go through, I tell you, very severe. Yeah. Those who have experienced all this, they will know. Yeah. All these are very real. So the benefits of meditation is very important. When you are faced with all this, your mind is very restless. A lot of fear, a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety, a lot of sadness. And these are all negative energy. And this is the one that will bring your immune system down. Because fear, worry, anxiety, and sadness, sorrow and lamentation can make your cells mutate and become miserable. Yeah. So this is the source of disease. This is the source of what they call death. So when you are confronted with all this, and you don't know how to recuperate from it, you don't know how to recover from it, then you go and see doctors and all those things. What they can do for you is give you some form of medication. Maybe physically they have an impact on you. But most of the time they will tell you it is a mental problem. They cannot help you in that sense. Then you see psychiatrists as a psychiatrist depend on which one you see. There are some that are quite good. Then they know how to monitor you and bring you out of it. But it is not a permanent solution because most of them may not have the dhamma that can actually explain to you clearly how you get entangled. Most of them, they use drugs, medication to actually make you feel better. Like you got panic attack, anxiety leading to the depression and all those things. What do? They give you some medication. Most of it is sedative, understand? They call it tranquilizer, or make you sleepy. Because most people who with this type of depression, they cannot sleep. They got insomnia problem, and they become very miserable. That's why it leads to suicidal tendency. And it's very traumatic, because they want to sleep, they cannot sleep. they want to become peaceful, they cannot, because this panic attack can come anytime. There's a lot of fear in them. So this type of suffering, which is mental suffering, is so real. So how are we going to deal with it? And the Buddha said, you develop heedfulness. To develop heedfulness, you must train your mind in awareness or mindfulness. Then from there, when it's stabilized, use it to meditate, to cultivate. And that becomes heedfulness. So when you start to meditate, the benefits of meditation will help you to recover and recuperate from all this so-called negative energy state that can bring about the condition for your immune system to go down and for you to be actually afflicted by all this disease, suffering and all those things. So inner peace is the first thing that you will get. Because when you are mindful, aware, and without thought, you are very serene, very peaceful, and very calm. And the first mental benefits that come with this type of meditation is the inner peace born of piti. Piti is a type of mental state. They call it a meditative joy or rapture or meditative peace. So when you have inner peace, you have what they call piti, sukha. Sukha is bliss, then tranquility or paucity. Yeah. Then this will lead to the silent mind. The mind that is without thought and just aware. The silent mind will make you very peaceful, very calm. Yeah. So this inner peace will bring about a lot of very good positive energy, stillness energy, silent energy. And your, what they call mental energy is conserved. It's not lost in thought. It's not channeled into fear, worry, anxiety, wrong thought. During this moment, you can understand the truth because there is a lot of clarity. And because of that, it brings about the second benefit, which is inner well-being. You feel a lot better. You feel a lot more peaceful, more calm, more positive, more confident within your mind, your heart. So this inner peace and inner well-being will lead to what they call the third one, clarity of mind. When your mind has clarity, because it's not occupied with fear, worry, anxiety, it's not restless, it's not confused, understand? So when you are very peaceful, very calm, you have clarity, you can reflect and contemplate into whatever life issue or problem that you have. Then with that clarity, you can develop some form of understanding to cope with it, understand? To overcome it. That's how meditation can help you in a very big way. But the most important thing is to use this clarity of mind, which is a silent mind, to meditate and develop the wisdom. That's why the fourth benefit is wisdom. The wisdom that comes with this type of clarity that enable you to meditate. And when you meditate with heedfulness, awareness, and this clarity of mind, you can know exactly how you get yourself entangled in life. How you actually, through delusion, grasp, cling, and hold, and react, and arise the craving, which conditions your suffering. How the evil roots comes to be and make you evil. And how these evil roots condition your mental suffering. So all this, you will start to understand. Then you will start to understand the noble truth very clearly. The Buddha's word will become very clear to you. The realities of life and existence, the first eight conditions or realities that the Buddha talked about will be very clear to you. Then all this that I mentioned will be very clear to you. If you don't have delusion, all this will not arise. That's why the Buddha said, suffering need not be when you have the wisdom, when you have the understanding. So when you are able to develop inner peace, means what? Every time you have problem, you just go back to a quiet place to just meditate and silence your mind. So this will develop the inner peace and inner well-being, but it's temporary. In the sense that when you are out of it and back to life, the problem come back to you. Understand? So that's why while you have these two states, inner peace and inner well-being, you will have this clarity of mind. You must develop the wisdom, the meditation. Because without wisdom, you cannot free. But when wisdom come to be, all the delusion that condition you to grasp and cling and hold and make you miserable, they will slowly fade away. Understand not? And you will develop the what they call happiness and joy within your mind. Because for the first time in your life, you understand there is a way out. And this way is so beautiful, and the Buddha has taught. And it is so clear. That's why when you start to insight into the reality of life and existence, into the characteristics of nature, when you start to understand the noble teachings of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self, anicchang, dukkang, and anatta, your mind opens up. It liberates. And that clarity leading to the wisdom is so powerful. It cuts across all delusion and frees you completely. And for the first time in your life, life becomes meaningful. Life becomes beautiful. No more suffering. No more problem. Understand? Then after that, the associated benefits will come. They call good sleep. Yeah? A lot of them with insomnia, they will like this. Yeah? Yeah. Then you can use all this meditative mind to do good things, to be a blessing to the world and all those things, to do wholesomeness. And when you radiate more and more metta, when you cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path more and more, you become more virtuous. You have right view, means you understand the secret of life. You understand the spiritual law that governs life and existence. You are no longer deluded. Then it will condition you to arise the right thought, right speech, and right action. And you become such a beautiful living being. Then the way you live your life, there is right livelihood. Then you constantly cultivate the four right effort to purify your thought and to make yourself more and more what they call virtuous, less and less evil. And finally, you develop mindfulness leading to heedfulness and the samadhi to realize the enlightenment. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is very powerful. When you have them, it can actually help you in a very big way. So, once your mind is trained, peaceful, have inner peace leading to inner well-being, clarity and wisdom, you don't have any worry, any fear, any negativity anymore. Your mind don't have attachment, don't have craving anymore. It's a free mind. That's why this mind sleeps very well. There is very good sleep. And to have good sleep is not easy. For those who have been having insomnia, they will know. Even after taking the sleeping pill, or what the psychiatrist or the doctor give that, after that good sleep, they feel very good. But most of this sedative medication that they give you, after you sleep, you wake up, you still very groggy. But at least it prevents your mental activity from arising. So it like knock you out, make you unconscious. Just like when you take antibiotic, it's to knock you off so that your internal system will have a chance to recuperate. Yeah. So that this nature can actually bring about recovery. Yeah. Because when you are thinking, your thought is negative, and your negative thought prevents your nature from working the necessary requisite recovery or allow you to recuperate. That's why when you have good sleep and deep sleep, it's like you feel recharged the next day, understand not? Sometimes even for 10, 20 minutes, you know how to meditate. When you are very tired, you just silence your mind. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, you recover very well. And you feel very good, very good. Because the inner peace and the inner well-being bring about a, what they call the cells will recover. Yeah. All those cells that has been like stressed out, tired, they are like recharged, understand? And the positive energy make them feel good. And your immune system recover. Yeah. So good sleep is one of them. Then with this clarity of mind and ability to see things clearly, you will be able to study better. Huh? Study better or do your work. Huh? Means career or whatever. Huh? Anything that you attempt to do, huh? Career, your research or whatever, you need to have this type of mind. Huh? Then you can be a blessing to all. Huh? The last one is blessing to all. When you have the meditation, the wisdom, the Noble Eightfold Path cultivated, you are very beautiful, and you can be a blessing not only to you, to your loved ones, to your friends, your colleagues, and anybody who has relationship with you, to society, to the community, and even to the environment, even to the planetary consciousness. Every thought you arise is so beautiful. Understand? Huh? So these are the important benefits of meditation that can arise the moment you develop heedfulness. Yeah. And heedfulness comes from mindfulness. And to be mindful, you need to understand two things. The Buddha actually explained very clearly under his teaching. He said, human beings are not peaceful, not mindful, and not able to develop the meditative peace or the inner peace and inner calmness to meditate is because they have a lot of hindrance. He called it the 5 mental hindrance of mind. Yeah. These 5 mental hindrance are very real. Yeah. He said, these are your sensual desire, your ill will. These two is a pair, and it's also related to your evil roots of greed and hatred. Desire, the sense. Every time you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or tactile feel anything, without wisdom, you don't have equanimity of mind. You don't have samadhi. You will react to what you see, what you hear, what you smell. Yeah. And your reaction is always either positive or negative. If you like that sensual experience, then you have craving, positive craving, and that essential desire. The moment you develop this, your mind is distracted, understand? You are preoccupied with that sense experience. There is no longer clarity, understand? You cannot meditate anymore. Because this mind that is preoccupied with the sensual experience is lost in thought. Then when you react negatively, you arise fear, worry, anxiety, sadness, dislike. That's why you have a lot of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. And these are the duality of life. These are the first two hindrances of mind. It hinders you from entering the meditative state of peace and calmness. That's why there is no more inner peace, inner calmness, leading to inner well-being. Yeah. So this aspect is very important. Then the third hindrance is sleepiness, lethargic mind, sloth and torpor. The Buddha said when you don't understand the importance of meditation, of training this mind to be mindful, to be heedful, you don't see the importance of it. You cannot understand life. That's why you become sleepy. It's just like you attend a class, you don't like the subject, you don't know what is going on, you feel sleepy. Yeah. So that is also a hindrance. When you are sleepy, you are not aware. The mind don't have clarity. So that is why you cannot be peaceful and you cannot meditate. The fourth one is the worst, the Buddha said. restlessness of mind. What is restlessness? Your mind become very agitated and restless. Why did it happen? Why did it happen? Why are you not happy and peaceful? It's because you have problem, isn't it? Problems of life. What are the problems? Whatever problem that we talk about, health problem, financial problem, career problem, relationship problem, mental problem, old age and sickness problem, the fear of death and all this problem, children's problem, in-law problem, neighbor's problem, children's whatever, friend's problem also, your brothers, your sisters. So all these problems lead to what? Fear, worry, anxiety, sadness, sorrow and lamentation. That's why your mind becomes not peaceful, restless. Worry about this, worry about that. Understand? Worry about your children. Nowadays, parents, a lot of you worry about your children. Sometimes they worry about their career, their relationship, their future. Then you got so many things to worry about. Even yourself, your health problem, you worry. Understand? Your financial situation, you worry. Your business, your relationship with people. There are so many things that can make you full of worry, anxiety, fear. So when this thing come, your mind is not peaceful, it's restless, it's agitated. And you think a lot. Understand? And the more you think, the more fear it arises because it projects. What happened if that word? It's not a reality, but you project your thought and develop the fear. That's why you become anxious. When your children don't come back in time, they are late, especially you have daughters. You worry like anything. Then sometimes spouse, the husband went out, 12 o'clock still not back yet. You still wide awake, waiting. Call, the phone switch off. Then you go and worry more. Come back, you get angry because all sorts of thought went through your mind. Understand? You think the fellow is trying to do something funny outside. Why don't you on your phone? So all this misunderstanding can lead to further what they call suffering in life. When there is no trust, when there is no sincerity in the relationship, when there is no understanding of each other, then suffering becomes more and more real. Then when you take things for granted, especially between spouse, you don't know how to arise the appropriate right speech to make them feel good and happy. You do not appreciate what they have done for you and contribute towards the family life. That's why you must have a lot of appreciation in life. You appreciate them for what they are, for what they have done for you, for their love, their care, their sacrifice. Even children, you should appreciate what your parent has done for you. And as parents, we should appreciate how our children actually think of us, help us in whatever way. Especially between spouse. If you take things for granted, there is no more appreciation and love, then it develops misunderstanding, hatred and other things. And you can see it very clearly. Because they only argue. The ego take over. And every time they argue, there is no right speech anymore. Gentle, pleasant and kind speeches gone. No more. Angry, egoic speech come to be. Understand? So, life is like that. When you don't have wisdom, when you don't have understanding, the mind gets agitated because of the wrong thought. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is about wrong thought and right thought. Wrong thought are all the thoughts that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, suffering and misery, your selfishness, your emotional negativity. These are all wrong thoughts. So very easy that whenever you are not happy and not peaceful, means whatever you think is the wrong thought. So what are right thoughts? This is very important. If you have right thought, it will condition your right speech, right action, right livelihood, following the Noble Eightfold Path, life become beautiful. So what are right thoughts? Huh? What are right thought? Huh? The easiest answer is what? Thought that don't have the evil roots. Understand? Anything that is not wrong thought is right thought, isn't it? Correct? But you don't know how to apply, you know, when you say that. So you have to actually reflect and contemplate what is right thought. So in the text, normally you have only these four things. They say the four Brahma Vihara. When you have that as the base, it becomes right thought. But you must understand what this is. Understand that? The first Brahma Vihara state is love, metta. When you have metta, you have right thought. You know what is metta or not? True metta, universal love. When you have metta, you can never get angry. You can never get jealous. There is no more negativity. There is only love. So when you have thought that is based on love, you don't get angry anymore, correct? Not? You don't get all the jealousy anymore. Understand? Not? The envy and the jealousy also is gone. Because you really love. And out of this love, you will radiate well-being and happiness to all. And the right thought that has love actually is the basis of relationship. When I love you, I respect you. I appreciate what you have done. I care for you. Then I talk to you very nicely. Understand? I'm no longer angry with you. I accept you for what you are. Understand? Then I try to develop further understanding to bring about good relationship. Then I arise the kind, gentle, and pleasant speech that can bring about happiness, joy, harmony, and what they call meaning to our life and relationship. Then the family unit becomes beautiful. You can go back and try. For the first time, you go back and tell your wife, I don't know what you call them, honey or what, I don't know. I say, thank you so much, actually. Then they will be very surprised. You never do that. Why all of a sudden like that? Then they may think initially, this guy up to something already. Otherwise, he wouldn't be so kind. But you sincerely tell them, actually, I reflected. Actually, I appreciate what you have done. You have sacrificed so much for the family, for us. You look after the household, the cooking, the washing, all. And these are not easy things, you know. I hire a maid also not so reliable. I have to pay it. And I have to have the problem of going to the agent, the maid agency, sorting all this out, renewing their contract, their levy, and all those things. And there are so many problems related to the maid. You know? But you be my wife. I don't have to pay. And you do all this for me through your own love and sacrifice. I appreciate. And when you do that, your wife would become very happy, I tell you. And they will work for you more. And there is a lot of joy when they do that. But if you take for granted and ignore, you know what the wife will think? This guy, think that I'm a maid. Asampoa, is it in Hokkien? Every day ask me to do all this. Never appreciate what I have done. So out of the anger and the unhappiness, you know what happened? The cooking also no good. The washing also no good. Then when you comment, he tell you, you're so good, you wash, you cook. Then he say, I'm going to go on strike. You take care of the children, you think so, is it? See? Argument. But when you appreciate what they have done with the right speech and the kind speech, they feel so good. No? Then everything they do, you say, thank you so much. You don't just go and react. Most spouse, they take for granted. I know, don't repeat this thing. Don't every time nag me. So how to communicate? Where is the right speech? The wife also unhappy inside. Whole day, especially housewife, sacrificing, doing all this comeback, not a word of appreciation, someone can ask scolding. What type of husband is that? Their thought would think negatively. And when you think like that, you think the wife will be happy? And you know why the husband is like that? Because he himself have enough problem in the office. That's why he come back. He also not happy. He reacted out. But people without the Dhamma is like that. Understand? You cannot solve your problem because you don't have clarity of mind. You don't feel for your loved one. Understand? You don't know how they go through life. But when you feel for them, you appreciate what they have done. And this is right speech. Right thought leading to right speech. Then right action. Then you tell the wife, honey, because you have done so well, I think tonight you deserve a good meal. Let's go for dinner. Where do you want to go? First time you ask them, they will be very happy. There is a lot of joy. But doesn't mean it's only for the wife. The wife can also do the opposite for the husband. You can tell him the opposite. Oh, I understand you sacrifice so much for the family. You work so hard. Sometimes at the expense of your own freedom, your own holiday. But you make sure that was what they do. Otherwise, it's not sincere. But you have to actually bring about what they call good relationship through understanding them, then through supporting them. That's why they always have this good saying, isn't it? For every man's success, there is a woman behind. Correct not? But that woman may not be the wife, you know. But most of the time, it's the wife that is responsible. But the funny thing about men is, without wisdom, when they have money, that is the time the wife is worried. When they don't have money, the wife also worried. So, what do they want? The husband have enough money, not too much. But this is your fear, isn't it? That's why you have good relationship, you have the Dhamma, all these problems won't arise. Then the wealth will come. The blessings that you have through your cultivation, your good karma, your good merits will bring about a lot of good well-being to you. You have a lot of generosity, a lot of kindness. That's why when you think of the right thought, like generosity is a right thought. You think of helping people. You think of contributing back to society to help humanity in whatever way, through service or charity or whatever. That is right thought. Then thought of sincerity, contentment, respect, gratitude. These are all right thoughts. Not necessarily the four Brahma Vihara. Then learn to rejoice in the goodness and wholesomeness of whoever, especially your loved one. You rejoice, sadhu, oh, you are very good today. You did a lot of good things. Don't always complain. Why simply donate? You think money not money? Oh, like that you gonna. The wife want to do charity, you go and pour cold water. So you bring about conflict, misunderstanding. But if it's her money she wants to do, is this so wholesome, you should rejoice. Understand or not? Even if she asks money from you because she's a housewife, she got no income, you should consider that point that this is goodness, this is kindness, this is meritorious. Why not? If I can afford, I should support. Understand? And then it becomes right thought. Understand? No more negativity. So the teaching is very beautiful. I don't have enough time to elaborate on this Noble Eightfold Path thing because it's a very wide field. So right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, and the four right effort is very important. If you can cultivate these six Noble Eightfold Path factor, it's already good for you as a lay person. Very, very good already. Then you develop wisdom and the meditation through the right mindfulness and the samadhi. And that will complement your spiritual life, your spiritual understanding that you need to complete the understanding of life. Without spiritual understanding, life is incomplete. You can still have suffering when you confront the Noble Truth without wisdom. So with this, I will conclude today's talk. I hope it benefits you all. Okay, thank you so much.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
We thank Brother Teo for his very interesting and enlightening talk this morning. I think we should touch on the life of most of us, we, our family, our friends, our relatives, may also have encountered countless life problems that causes so much pain, lamentation, grief, and despair, anxiety, and worry, and so on and so forth. And Brother Teo has explained to us how to overcome all this through understanding the secret of life, by understanding the Four Noble Truths. Any question you'd like to pose to Brother Teo? Yeah.
Firstly, thank you very much, Brother Teo, for sharing your knowledge about this. In fact, I think this is one of the best Dharma talk that I've attended to. My question is first like this. Buddha has definitely described a lot about suffering. Did he ever describe about depression during his time? Or any experience that he has been dealing with it, or he has seen this during his time? Thanks.
Thank you so much for the question. It's a very good question. I have to be frank with you. I was not around when the Buddha was around. I cannot answer that question. But roughly based on my understanding, my nature, my cultivation, I can tell you this thing. During the Buddha's time, life was more simple, understand not? Society was not so evolved, so complicated, understand not? And during that time, renunciation is actually an honor to the family, understand not? Going for one of your family members becoming a monk is considered a very honorable thing. But nowadays, parents are different. They are so materialistic focused. Once they hear the son want to renounce, study everything, become a graduate professional, just waste their life and become monk. They cannot understand. Then during the time of the Buddha, there is no so much sophisticated economic activity. Understand? Life was not so stressful, more simple. Understand? So they got no time for depression. Understand? You know why? Maslow's need theory is very simple, isn't it? What are the first basic needs that living beings look for? Huh? Food and shelter, isn't it? When there is not enough food on the table and shelter over the head, what is the first thing that you look for in life? You want to fulfill this too. That's why they just work and work and work and work and find means to have this. Because they don't have such thing as health issue and all those things. Because last time I remember when I was young, not to say during Buddha's time, even during the 60s and the 50s when I was very young, even the early 70s before I went to universities, I saw in my village people getting sick. They don't really know what the sickness is. Because there is no idea of what cancer is, what TB is, all those things. They think it's normal. If they can just go through life, they will go through life. Even sick, until very sick in the deathbed, they still refuse to go hospital. They prefer to go and see the medium, the Chinese sensei and all things. So that was the tradition at that time. And most of them, the suffering is very much less. Understand? Yeah. Not so complicated as our society now. Because our society now, the stress level is so high. The sensuality is so high. That's why the internet has made a big difference to what society is nowadays. Last time, everything is very slow. Understand? Last time, you need to walk very far. So, you are mainly towards agriculture, cultivating and all those things. Understand? Yeah. I believe there may be some monks who have problems. Understand? Because as a monk, sometimes it's not easy, you know. Not. You feel really, really lonely at times when you meditate until you don't know what is going on. Yeah. Can be very confused because the sankhara is like that. When there is lack of wisdom. Yeah. Then there is also politics within the community. You read the sutta, you will know. Huh? They align themselves to different disciples. Understand? That's how you see the Sikhism that this, what they call Devadatta created. Remember Devadatta? Yeah? The cousin of the Buddha. He wanted the Buddha to actually implement vegetarian and all those things. That he knew the Buddha won't agree on because the Buddha has his reason for it. So he tried to impress the followers. He said, see, the Buddha is not serious, he said. He didn't even want to implement vegetarian. So to him, is vegetarian is what? I am more compassionate. Answer. And this is outwardly. Answer. It's not at the heart level. Answer. It's outwardly tell people, I vegetarian. Answer. I implement this. So he pulled one group out of it. That's why that Sikhism happened at that time. The difference of opinion. Then later on, they even have this issue before the Buddha passed away, Parinibbana. Some are aligned to Mahakasapa. Some are aligned to Sariputta. I think this type of politics, even in office you see a lot, aligned to whoever. Yeah. So they are bound to have all this what they call human behavior. It's a common phenomena of humanity, because when there is still delusion, the attachment, the clinging, the craving will be there. So the question about did the Buddha talk about depression, I really cannot answer you because I didn't see anywhere in the sutta. But based on what I understand is there are less cases at that time. Even have, I think, is more towards the community of monks rather than the lay people. Well, lay people, very simple life. But those who really renounce and want to become monks, they are more philosophical. They think deep into life. So when you think too much, psychological problem can arise. Because wisdom is not at the thought level. So this is how I understand it and see it. I just share what I understand. And I have to be very frank. Whatever I don't know, I tell you I don't know. Because the Buddha's time, I'm not around. And I don't read so much of the sutta. So this is how I will understand it. Okay? Thank you. Hope I answer your question.
Thank you, Sadhu. Any more questions? I have just one question or so, Prabhupada Teo. My daughter, first year psychology and business studies student, is doing her internship now in a psychology center in KL. Yesterday, she came back and she shared with me that a couple came to the center and looked for the psychologist, her boss. And posing a very funny questions by the wife. The wife say she's very depressed because the husband, she just cannot stand the husband staring at other girls, other ladies. So I just laugh off what she say, because to me is this sort of thing, small thing also got depression. I don't know. So, but now on listening to this morning, yes, after listening to your talk, I think can be quite real.
Yes,
people.
It's very real.
What is the remedy you would like to prescribe? Okay, so that I didn't ask my daughter what the psychologist prescribed. So I would like to know what would you advise so that I can go back and tell my daughter.
Thank you so much. That is a very good question. Sometimes you don't think it's a very simple or trivial question. But that case, for them to take that step of going to the psychiatric department to see a psychiatrist is already telling you what serious thing has happened. Otherwise, they go there for what? It's something that you feel shy to let people know. No, hey, I got to see psychiatrist, or means mental problem. And the mental problem, what is posed by the wife, is like so simple that I can't stand my husband, staring at girls. Luckily, he didn't say beautiful girls. Stare at girl. What is your first thought that come to you? Maybe like Brother Jim said, it's very true. For most of us who don't have this problem, you've been too possessive, correct? Too sensitive. Why you worry your husband look like a girl? As long as they don't take it back, it's okay. I got one joke. One Westerner, he's a planner. Very successful guy. He married a Thai lady. Stay in KL, one of the condo during the 80s, the boom time. Because he was our planner. I'm the CNS consultant. So we became very close. He told us this joke was the best, he said. They said, "Hey, you bachelor, huh?" Because we thought he came from Europe just to do her business. He said, no, I'm married. My wife is in the condo in KL. He said, "It's a Thai." Oh, then we said, "You got to go back early." "Oh, no need to worry." Then we say, "Why?" Oh, he tell us this famous story. He said, "My wife is very good, is it? I understand you very well. Is it? Your career demands you to entertain and all those things. You can go and eat. You can go and eat whatever you like to eat, but don't tap out back." That is the only rule. Wow. When he said that, everybody there, wow, they were very envious of the wife. You see, you got a very good wife, you know. But the reality is, the wife understand the reality, understand? You get jealous for what? That's why this one need to be fixed, understand or not? Through explaining. What I normally advise people is the Dhamma is like that. Yeah? It is actually non-self, but it cannot see. That's why when you approach a problem or a situation, you must always look at it with sincerity, with understanding. Understanding means without the selfishness involved, understand or not? That's why it's non-self, understand or not? When you are not selfish, you already don't have the egoic mind, understand or not? You are sincere. You have love. Then you know how to resolve issue and problem amicably so that it doesn't hurt anybody, so that it benefits everybody. Understand? So when you approach life this way, then you apply the Noble Eightfold Path, all problems can be resolved. Noble Eightfold Path means what? Right view leading to right thought. So what is right view? You have to accept your husband for what they are, understand? They are alive. Let them live. Doesn't mean that you don't care at all. Doesn't mean that you let them do what they want. No. Accept means what? Don't react. Accept him for what he is. Then you reflect, you contemplate, then you act. Act with what? Act with Noble Eightfold Path, understand? No? Noble Eightfold Path means what? With the right view to accept, not to react means what? You got no more anger, isn't it? Because you don't react to him, isn't it? You got no more fear, isn't it? No more anxiety, isn't it? Then your this thought will not be like compulsive and intrusive because of your fear, you know. It trigger of this thought, understand? Because the fear of your husband having an affair or marry somebody, leave you, and you cannot survive. That fear is a very strong fear, you know, not for ladies, especially those who are married and don't have confidence in themselves. And this fear is a projection of the thought, it's not a reality. Nothing has happened yet. Even it should happen, so what? You have to understand there is a law of karma, understand? You have to have this right view in regards to the law of karma. The Buddha said we are born of our karma. Head to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. So whatever that happened, the Buddha said, there are causes and conditions behind. Correct or not? Even if you should be afflicted and your husband make you miserable, it's because of what? Karma. In the past, you could have been the man. And when you did to another girl, make them miserable, you never question yourself, why did I do that? But when your husband did that to you, you become so angry, so jealous, and full of misery. You hate him so much, understand? And you say, how can this, he used this very negative word, because these are real people who talk to me. How can this bastard do this to me? Last time is honey, darling. Now he said, I sacrificed so many years of my youth, my life, married to him, gave birth to two beautiful kids, and he did that to me. See? Anger, hatred, evil root. Understand? Root of all evil. That's why you suffer, you become miserable. So I asked one question, very simple. I said, your life, you ask yourself, if you continue to do things like that, react like that, what happened? Are you happy? You are miserable, not happy. Cannot eat, cannot sleep. Got to see a psychiatrist. Husband also not happy. Because you don't have noble evil power. You don't know how to bring about good relationship. The husband will drift away further and further. They will compare one no. The one outside is so nice, so friendly, so understanding. This one come back, nag, 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 angry, angry, anger. And this is what is happening to most family, you know. Because the anger, the hatred is the evil root and make them very angry and very jealous. And they speak all those wrong speech, you know, and the wrong action that they take. Sometimes they go to office and create a scene. After that, that's the end of your relationship. And I said, why do you want to do all these things? Resolve it amicably. And I said, I have helped many people who has this problem. And finally, the husband not only come back to them, they have the good life. Yeah. And I say, when you have noble evil power, you become so beautiful, so virtuous. You think, who is the one who lose out? Your husband is the one who lose out. Isn't it? Doesn't know how to choose such a beautiful wife. Like I said just now, no need to pay like a maid and say, I'll do everything for you. You don't know the benefits of having a good wife. Huh? When you have a good and understanding wife who is happy, I tell you, your life is beautiful. You are so blessed. Understand? Huh? Where to find? No need to hire a maid. Do everything for you with so much joy and happiness. You only need to say some nice words and take them out. And be faithful, of course. So life is very simple, isn't it? So whatever happened, don't react. Don't condemn. Be at peace. And then, with a mind that has peace, there is clarity, isn't it? Because you are not angry, you are not emotional, there is no fear, you are not agitated, there is no more restlessness in your mind. Then with that clarity, you sit down and contemplate. What are my options? What can I do? What went wrong? Understand not? Then when you reflect and contemplate, then you realize, maybe I also didn't give him enough attention, understand not? I take things for granted. When he come back, I just let go of my emotion and unhappy thought. That's why I end up my husband find me no more interesting. Understand? Not like the early days when they are dating and courting. Oh, take your time, don't worry. But the moment they are married, the husband start already. Why take so long? What are you doing? No more patience. But this is the reality. Like Alexander Pope, you know what he said? Yeah? The famous author. Reality begins after the first day of marriage. Correct. Before marriage is all pretense. A lot of character is all hidden, concealed. All the sweet talk. I love you. Honey, how are you? Where do we go honeymoon? And how to say. But when you start to go into life and become married, if you don't understand what the relationship is, what does it mean to commit yourself to a relationship? Because a commitment that can bring about happiness and joy to the marriage relationship demands a lot of sincerity, understanding. When you are sincere to commit to this relationship, you look forward to a good life, a good relationship. Means you start to trust each other. Understand? Sincerity will bring about trust. When you trust, you don't have jealousy, you don't query. Then if both of you keep to that sincerity and trust, the marriage is beautiful. Then give and take, love each other sincerely, truly. Then be appreciative of each other's contribution. Don't talk about negative things. have Noble Eightfold Path, everything will become beautiful. Don't go and project your fear. Don't go and do all those stupid things that will arise the evil root. That's why my advice to you is, whenever you are not happy and not peaceful, the evil root is there. The hindrance of mind is there. You are no longer peaceful. You are no longer happy. You no longer have clarity of mind. You don't have Noble Eightfold Path. You cannot solve your life problem. Yeah. So Noble Eightfold Path is a very powerful meditation. And if you can truly cultivate this, it will be a blessing to you. It will bring about countless benefits, limitless merits. When you cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, means what? You follow the advice of the Buddha. What is the advice of the Buddha? All Buddhas. All evil you have to avoid in it. Noble Eightfold Path, where got evil? Everything also right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. So no evil. Then cultivate goodness, wholesomeness. Right speech, right thought, right action, right livelihood are all very meritorious virtues. That's why you already avoid all evil to good. Then right mindfulness lead to heedfulness and meditative wisdom. And this is purification of mind. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is the advice of the Buddha. It's the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So whatever you do in the name of meditation, if it doesn't bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation, that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Understand? That is some other type of meditation. So do not make the mistake of being gullible. You go to retreat, you meditate, have fantastic meditative experience, thinking that that is equivalent to good progress and wisdom, enlightenment. If you still don't have the Noble Eightfold Path, you are nowhere near what the Buddha is saying. You can interpret that fantastic experience as, oh, I insight into the characteristic of nature. Anicchang dukkang anatta. I have what insight, what insight. You can go and find out yourself. After that, when you come out to life, do you have the Noble Eightfold Path? If you don't have, you still don't understand life. You still can have suffering. That's why a lot of these yogis tell me, after many years when I share with them, they say, yeah, brother, you are right. I was peaceful at the retreat, very happy, very calm. And when I come out, I can maintain for sometimes 1 week, sometimes 2 weeks, maximum 3 weeks. After that, I realize the same old thing come out. I still get angry. I still got fear. I still got what they call problem that can make me unhappy and miserable. I still have conflict in life and relationship. I say, you know why? You don't have Noble Eightfold Path. Understand? You don't have right speech, right action, right thought, and right livelihood. You don't have right view with regards to the nature's law that governs life and existence. So if you explain to them, your daughter, that this is how you actually take care of the problem, is see there is a projected thought, a fear, that is not the reality. Your life, why do you want to allow it this way? I always say you got two choices in life. When you confront the reality of life and existence, even health problem, death or whatever, or even financial problem, you got two choices. One, react and become miserable. Project your fear, worry, anxiety. Second is, have right view to accept the reality of what happened. Don't react. At peace. Means what? No more fear, no more worry, no more anxiety. Then, with that clarity of mind, ask yourself, what are your options to resolve this problem, or so-called issue, amicably, so that everybody is happy? Yeah. Later on, if you've got time, I tell you one incident where I helped resolve so beautifully. That lady was in depression over the daughter that was like her. She is the maternity mother. Maybe I just finish it off within 1-2 minutes. She is the maternity mother. You know? So when she gave birth to that child, I think it's the third child, she was so stressed out, you know, because no maid, nothing. He told the husband, I need a maid. The husband said, yeah, we are trying to find, but not easy. Then they got a friend who is very rich, very wealthy, but no children, you know. Then they say, why not you let us take care of your new daughter? Oh, then the husband was very keen. Tell the wife. The wife also very happy. Okay, pass over. We can come back. So weekday, she can work. She was very happy. She told me the first few years was so happy. Then what happened? Later on, the wife came to know after a few years that rich couple loved this daughter so much, want to adopt it legally. So want to ask the wife to give up the what they call the rights to this daughter and allow them to adopt. Oh, that time the wife panicked, and reacted. You know. Then the husband also get angry, the mother-in-law also get angry, because to them is, why do you do that? Understand or not? This couple is really without child and like this child, and they have a lot of money and wealth. They can inherit all this. Understand or not? So to the husband and the mother-in-law, it's a good thing, but to the mother, my child, no, how can you just force me to give away? So she becomes so depressed and so, and the relationship strained until almost suicidal. Then one of the good friend was my meditator under me, doing meditation with me many years ago. Then she told her, you better go and see Brother Teo. Then when she came to me, I just explained to her very simple. I said, you don't react and become like that. You do all this, are you happy? You are not happy. Your daughter is caught in between. Your husband also not happy. Your mother-in-law also not happy. The couple also undecided. Nothing get resolved because there is evil root, anger, fear, and all those things. And there is real fear, no phobia. So I told her, why not you just accept this reality? I don't say you agree with them and that they are right. You accept this reality and you sit back. Reflect and contemplate. What are your options? How best you can solve this problem? So you think of what? You think of your daughter, isn't it? What is best for her? That's why I say selfless. Not about you anymore. If you are so egoic, I am the mother, that thought is going to make you miserable. You're attached to this thought. And you want things your way, which is not nature's way. They are what they are. You have to accept them. The reality is like that. So how can I resolve it amicably? When I explained to her, she became happy again. You know what I told her? No? I said, you think for the best and the future of your daughter. How can you resolve this amicably so that everybody is happy? I said, you can talk to your husband, okay? Now, I understand. I don't want to get angry. I don't want to react. I respect you for what you are. I understand your sincere intention and wish you want best for our daughter. Understand? Okay, we sit down and talk. Okay? Can we resolve this amicably? Means what? You only need to ensure that you are still the maternity mother. Understand? Not? And you can give a legal adoption. But you ask for your right to see your daughter. Understand? Not? And the right for your daughter to see you. Then, as long as your daughter decides to stay with them, and this is what she wants, and this is what she really loves, then you have to tell yourself, your life, you decide. Your daughter's life, you better let her decide. She may make a mistake later on, but you put in the agreement, if she decides to come back to you, she has every right to sever that legal document. You leave that right to your daughter. And you will be very happy because she has a good future. Because the couple promised her good education, good future, everything. So I say, if you resolve it like that, you are still the happy mother. Your husband will love you more because you don't react and create a scene. Your mother-in-law will say, oh, my daughter-in-law, not bad. Now she understands. Then you are still the maternity mother. You can still see her anytime. Then you wish for her well-being, her future, everything. Then you talk to your daughter. As a mom, I have a duty to take care of you. But now the situation is like that. Are you happy if they were to adopt you? You talk to her, although still young. But at least she understands that the mother loves her and protects her through all this resolving with wisdom and understanding, so that there is no anger, no hatred, no misunderstanding. Then when she listens, she becomes happy again. Understand? Not? Because it can be resolved. Understand? Not? Just through an understanding. Not to be angry, not to be fearful. Fear, anger, and emotion are negative states that will make you miserable. Evil root, root of all evil. You must have noble eightfold path, right view to accept the reality, then right speech, right action, and right thought to talk to people nicely. Okay? I better end, otherwise too late. Okay, we end. Huh?
Yeah, thank you, Brother Teo. I think many of us like to listen to more, but anyway, it's 11:45. We're going to stop here. Today, as we come here to pay homage to the Buddha, listen to the Dharma, and to do other good deeds as well, we'll gain some good merits. We'd like to invite Brother Teo to lead us in making some aspiration and sharing the merits of all sentient beings.
Okay. So we will do the closing puja. We invoke the sharing of merits with the devas, with all the beings. Then transfer merit and share merits with the departed one. Then invoke the blessing for the nation. Then you make your aspiration. Like Brother Jim said, it has been a very wholesome 1 hour 45 minutes. You have listened to the Dharma, straightened your view. You have paid your respect to the Buddha. You have keep your 5 precepts, renew your 5 precepts. Then you have straightened your view and you rejoice. All these are very meritorious, and some of you have provided good service. So with this, we will invoke the power of merits, and we share with all beings and do whatever blessing that the closing puja will allow us to do. Okay, we will start with Akasatacha Pumata, sharing of merits with Deva. I will chant in Pali. Those who can understand or can follow, you can follow. Akasata ca bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakantu loka sasana itawata ca amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. Idang minya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang minya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang minya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Dewa satu kalena sasa sampati hitoce. Pito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko itmina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana pattiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to the Buddha.
Bhutang bhuje mi. Dhammang bhuje mi. Sanghang bhuje mi.